Hello, this is the RTE Rugby World Cup podcast, and our guests this morning, Michael Corcoran from Japan, Eddie O'Sullivan, and Mikey Stafford of RTE Digital. We're going to chat in a moment with all of the guys. We'll start though with Michael Corcoran, because while everyone involved over here thinks that the World Cup has been going on forever, somebody who's from New Zealand said to me this morning, Michael, it only starts this weekend. That was news to me.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things, isn't it? That's the way Dara people from New Zealand and indeed other countries look upon it. I mean, there are friends of mine from that part of the world. And as far as they're concerned, the Rugby World Cup starts this weekend. They're coming here on 12-day trips. As far as they're concerned, they couldn't be concerned with, as they describe it, Mickey Mouse matches that have gone on up to this. Their words, not mine. Interesting, I was at the opening match of that pool between New Zealand and South Africa, and I was talking to some of the media lads there, and I asked them if they were staying for the duration of the World Cup, and they said, oh no mate, we're going home on Monday and we'll be back for the real World Cup then after that. So from their point of view, well, we've been slogging around Japan, and it's an absolutely fantastic country. You know, the real knockout arm wrestles begin this weekend, and there are four massive matches.
Absolutely, and get the plug out of the way, all live on RTE radio and television, back to back, Saturday, Sunday, starting with Australia, England. Unbelievable. You could do a series of podcasts on that itself, the Cheka Jones face off, the Randwick connection, all of it. There's great subplots as ever. But tell us, Michael, bring us up to speed, because you were at Joe Schmidt's putatively last press conference. Well, last press conference in terms of a team announcement this morning. We obviously hope it's not. What was the mood like?
Yeah, it's like the latest and the last of our series, isn't it? I mean, we all hope it's going to continue for another bit. There was a kind of seriousness attached to the whole thing, as there is with Joe when he does these things. I've been around the camp all week, and the players are massively relaxed about everything. They know that they've got a big game coming up this weekend. Obviously, it's knockout rugby from here on in, something which they're akin to and kind of satisfies them in terms of what they've done in the past. Joe is, you know, focused. He knows what's needed to beat New Zealand. We've done it, you know, quite often in the recent past. There was a huge crowd there. I mean, I tweeted a picture during the course of the week. I think on Tuesday there were 11 camera crews. I think there were nearly double that today. You could count the number of media people there in the high tens, as in 80, 90, almost up to 100 kind of thing. So there's massive interest, certainly, in Team Ireland. And obviously we know the team news. Kearney in instead of Larmour, Ringrose in the centre, and Peter O'Mahony in the back row. Otherwise, it's a horses for courses team. He's gone with his most experienced team, and one that he feels is equipped for to beat New Zealand and make the semi-final of the competition.
Yeah, all 15 have tasted victory against New Zealand, which is, I suppose, a significant cause for the optimists. Other than that, it's all speculation. The All Blacks look fantastic, but we don't know until they're tested how fantastic they are. Eddie O'Sullivan, what's your view? Good morning, Eddie, by the way. What's your view of the All Blacks? Are they about to peak?
It's an interesting All Blacks team, actually, because they've gone with Rhys and Bridge on the wings, which is, you know, what they've been doing for the World Cup. There's nothing new there, but they're very inexperienced players. They've never probably had an occasion of this magnitude to play in, you know, a World Cup quarter final where there's no room for error. So that's interesting that he's stuck to his guns on that and on the inexperienced side of it. The other point is selection of Bowden Barrett at full back and Richie Mwonga at 10, which, you know, I would say it's good for Ireland, because Mwonga, particularly if we can bring pressure on him, isn't as good as Barrett at managing the game. Now, certainly Barrett isn't going to be easy to defend at 15, but I think Barrett gets on the ball less at 15, and I think Mwonga can be pressured at 10, so that's good news for us as well. And the other one I'd look at there is he's starting Brody Retallick, who's had very little rugby played. He's like, I think, 20 or 30 minutes
half
of rugby
hour,
since
yeah.
He had damaged his shoulder. I think they would really have liked him to play against Italy. And the fact of the matter is, no matter how much you train, how hard you train, no matter how much contact you do in training, it's not the same thing as playing in a real-life game. So they're kind of three areas straight away that I think are kind of to Ireland's advantage.
Go ahead, Mikey.
Yeah, Eddie, I was just wondering, you mentioned the two wings, Rhys and Bridge. I was just looking at the caps they have as well. They've only got 12 between them. It's phenomenal, really. You grew up worrying about all, you know, iconic All Blacks wings like Lomu and Rococo and Howlett. Now it seems they change them nearly as regularly as their socks. I'm wondering, what's the reason for it? Is it down to the fact that they're the players that the big moneyed French and Japanese clubs want the most, so they can't hang on to them? Or is it simply that you want something unpredictable and something that the opposition haven't seen before?
I just think that it's basically that. I think that's their best option. You know, I don't think they picked the All Blacks based on trying to hold on to players. I think, you know, the Reese and Bridge are guys who aren't terribly experienced, but they are good players. We saw Reese against South Africa when things weren't working out well. He got that kind of a wounded duck cross kick from Richie Munga, and suddenly he was off to the races. So these guys are very good players. You know, they're not weaker than the guys that go in there, but they're less experienced. And that, for that reason, I think is what probably gives us a little chink of light there if we're going to exploit them, because they wouldn't have been in an environment like this. I mean, they have played for the All Blacks before, but not very often. They've played in Rugby Championship, which is, like, you know, it's top class international rugby. It's not do or die. This is do or die. Like, if things go wrong on the weekend for New Zealand, they're on the plane home, you know, on Monday, which is unconscionable for them. So for to put his confidence in the two wingers, as he has done during the tournament, though, in a massive game like this, he must be pretty happy that these are the two best guys for the job. But I still feel there's a little bit of vulnerability around that, particularly when it comes to the big occasion. And it'll be interesting to see if Ireland don't really test that in terms of the aerial bombardment that we're very good at. So yeah, I just think that's the way he thinks that's his best 15. There's no question about that. He doesn't do semantics really in terms of his selections. So I think that's a strong backline, but it's not the perfect backline. I think the bigger one there is Barrett at 15. Actually, I'm really happy about Barrett being at 15, because I don't think he's going to get his hands on the ball as much. He's a massive catalyst for New Zealand in attack. He's a very smart defender as well, and he can really cause problems when he's on the ball. I don't think he gets his hands on the ball as much at 15. It's practically impossible to bring him into the game as much as Richie Munga will be. So yeah, I think those selections give us a little chink of light there in terms of exploitation. I'm sure they're looking at us the same way, but we're much more settled than they are. If you look at the selection Joe Smith has put out, that's basically his best hand on the table there, the most experienced hand he can play. You know, you could make arguments about Rob Kearney, maybe Larimer. I doubt I was ever going to go that road. Kearney was always going to be the guy. You could make a case for Farrell instead of Henshaw, but again, Henshaw is hugely experienced. We had a massive game when they won in Chicago, and you could make a case like maybe Byrne for O'Mahony, but again, O'Mahony is a big game player. He had an outstanding game in 18. He actually saved the game on a couple of occasions in Lansdowne Road when we beat them in 18, and he's one of those guys that rises to the occasion. So Joe's got a very predictable, very solid, very experienced 15 compared to the All Blacks 15, which is not as experienced, and I would say not quite as solid in terms of Barrett has played 10 and 15 right through the summer. So there's a little bit more of unease there, I'd say.
Michael?
Yeah, I agree with Eddie to a large degree, to be fair about it. I think the further away from the 10 position Beauden Barrett is, the better for any team that's playing against them. In this case, obviously, it's Ireland. I do agree that the two wingers are vulnerable in terms of their defence duties. They're can be lethal coming forward, Bridge and Reese, Sever Reese. But defensively, I think that there is certainly a vulnerability there. The Brodie Retallick one, again, yes, I agree, is an interesting one. He's hardly played any minutes at all. And I would argue, you know, with respect to the other teams that are in that pool, that New Zealand's most difficult game was the match against South Africa in their opening weekend in Yokohama. Now, that seems so long ago at this stage, I can hardly remember what I was doing last week. Now, I might say back that far. So you're in a situation where I think, you know, gee, here I am talking, on an RT Rugby podcast talking about the All Blacks being undercooked going into a match. Ireland have had some pretty tough games all the way through. New Zealand haven't. And I really do think that they are very concerned about having to play a really fired up Irish team. With, you know, it was fantastic to see at first hand last weekend. Conor Murray being very sharp. I thought Sexton was excellent. You know, there were really seriously good signs there. Our pack causes a lot of difficulty. Joe singled out Peter O'Mahony in the press conference. Peter is a big game player. He always has been. And Peter is one of these fellas. I don't know, is it a Cork thing or otherwise, but you kind of almost tell him that he can't do something and that winds him up to do it.
What you call me?
And, you know, pardon? Yeah. So, like, he's, you know, he's a fella can steal a ball in a line-out. He can get up in front of Kieran Reid. He can get up in front of Sam Whitelock or a Tallack or people like that and grab a ball off them, and everybody's energised around him. He's just one of those fellas. You can look at all the stats. You know, Phil said to me sometimes, Peter O'Mahony, but he doesn't score many tries, really, to be fair. And I said, well, look, what about the rest of the thing that he pulls together? He's like the glue that brings everybody together, to be fair about it. And I think that Ireland have a, you know, the condition here, weather conditions will play a big part. We've been in some saunas for the last couple of weekends in matches. It's raining and raining quite heavily outside and has been for the last number of hours. It's supposed to be wet at match time on Saturday. There's a huge dip in temperature. It's now down to kind of, as I would call them, normal kind of Irish autumnal weather conditions. And I just think that Ireland have a really, really big performance in them. And if it comes on Saturday, they have a really serious chance of making it, a really good chance of making it to the semi-final of this competition.
Michael, I was wondering, among the New Zealand media over there, is Siva Ruiz's very selection, is that a done deal? That's an issue they dealt with, you know, at the start of the Rugby Championship, the fact that this is a guy who should arguably be playing for Connacht in the Pro 14 at the moment, except his the contract was made null and void after he was he wasn't convicted. He was discharged without conviction after assaulting his partner while drunk. It caused a few difficult press conferences for Steve Hansen at the time, and I suppose now it's becoming an issue in Ireland because now we're playing the All Blacks. That's a done deal as far as the New Zealand media are concerned, I presume.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, the thing about it is, you know, they're very literally black and white, so to speak, in terms of the way they deal with stuff in New Zealand. Like, it's an issue at the time, they deal with it and they move on. You know, and as far as they're concerned, it's dealt with. He's an All Black, you know, he's eligible to play, he's eligible to be picked. As Eddie said, he's picked arguably his two best wingers for the job to do this coming weekend. I just think that, I'm not saying it's going to be a bog or a quagmire, but certainly it's going to be difficult conditions underfoot, certainly. But it's not an issue. I mean, I've spoken to kind of my equivalent in New Zealand radio and some of their newspaper people as well, and they're, as far as they're concerned, they have a team that can beat Ireland and make it to the semi-final of the competition. And you know, what's happened in the past with players or otherwise is certainly not an issue for them at this stage.
I'd love to meet him, your equivalent in New Zealand. What's his name?
Nigel. good fella, Nigel Yaldon, actually. He's a good lad.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about him. He's a big... he's a great talker, isn't he? I mean, he's just loves
fella.
The stuff.
Walter, I think most radio people are, to be fair about it, Dara. So he's a good lad. He's from Hamilton. So he's kind of an out-of-towner, for want of a better phrase. And he's a good bloke. Always been good company. And, you know, always been very helpful to me, I have to say, and to our RT radio in the past in terms of, you know, audio and interviews and all kind of thing, whatever. He's a good lad.
Good to hear there's still a bit of fraternity in the crazy world of modern media. But can I go back to the conditions with you, Eddie? Because I'm a little more optimistic than I was 15 minutes ago. And you've pointed out, you know, rightly the size of the task ahead, but also pointed out a few potential vulnerabilities that this All Blacks team have. Just on that weather, I mean, the first thing really is to not to be too scientific about it. We have to get involved in a scrap. After 15 or 20 minutes, we have to be in this game and we have to be fighting. And it has to be apparent that this is going to be an 80-minute test for the All Blacks. I just have the fear, like everyone else, that Ireland hasn't been good at chasing down leads against inferior teams, never mind the All Blacks. How do you kind of double lock that first 15, 20 minutes in terms of defence?
Well, I think they'll look closely at the defence that we used in 2018, the last time we played them in Lansdowne Road. We kept them pretty much scoreless. They got two penalties and a drop goal. They didn't cross the whitewash, which is massive to stop New Zealand to cross the whitewash in over 80 minutes. So our defence is going to be huge. That's down to Ireland, down to a lot of energy and teamwork. We'd probably play our wings high and take away the space on the corners. I think you can do that against Richie Munga. I'm not sure you get away with it against Borden Barrett as much. Richie Munga is not a great kicking game. He's not as astute as exploiting the backfield. That's good for us, especially if the weather is wet. The ball could be a bit of a liability, harder for the All Blacks to hold on to it. By the way, harder for us as well. We'll have to hold on to the ball. And I think that the other side of that coin is that we have to attack out wide into the wide channels against New Zealand like we did in 18. The takeaways from 2018, which is if you're looking for a blueprint to beat New Zealand, is that, as I said, off the bat, our defence has to be rock solid all the way through, make them work for every yard. That's taken as a given against a team like that. But in terms of attack, we've got to put pressure on the scrum. We did that in 2018. We've got to put pressure on the ruck. We did that again in 2018. We won some huge turnovers. Peter Romani had a couple of massive ones. And the big one for me is we've got to change our attack, which is easier said than done if it's raining. We have to start going to the outside channels. We've got to get that blend of using our forwards to carry off 9 and 10 or going behind them or them passing out their pod. That means that the All Blacks have to be careful how they get off the line. And we know they go soft in the corners. And, you know, we made big inroads there the last time. Like, we were making 10, 15 metres of carry sometimes when we got into those channels. The thing is, we haven't done that so far in the tournament, though. Maybe this is the big reveal now that we know it's New Zealand, that we'll see the ball getting a lot more air. But if it's a wet, sticky evening, the game, it might be harder to play that game, you know. So I don't think it suits us for the weather to be wet, and I don't think it suits them either. If it gets into a complete slugfest, I don't know. I don't think that's a great place for us to go either. They're probably happy enough to play that way against us. I'm not sure we'd be happy enough to play against them like that. But I think, look, everyone agrees that, like, even the players are coming out and saying they know they're going to have their perfect performance to win this game. And this is not like playing the All Blacks in an autumn international. It's a different level now. We have to appreciate that. Like, if you think from New Zealand's point of view, if these guys have to get on a plane and go home next weekend, their life won't be worth living when they get back to New Zealand. I mean, it'll be misery upon misery for a long time. To go out of the World Cup in the quarterfinal, there was, you know, pretty much chaos about it in 2007. So these guys are going to be playing for their lives. So that's a different New Zealand team that came in to Dublin in November at the back end of their season. And we were the better team in Dublin. There's no question about that. We deserved to win that game. You know, it was all chips on the table, but it wasn't a World Cup knockout. So it's probably a different New Zealand team that shows up, in the sense that they'll probably even bring more intensity than they did in Dublin. And we have to match that from the start. But I think we still have to play some good rugby to get past them.
Obviously, it'd be wonderful if it's a tight encounter, because I think nobody believes that Ireland can put a cricket score on New Zealand. But if we get dragged into that slugfest and it comes down to a goal-kicking competition, we could take it. I'm not talking about extra time goal kicking competition, Eddie. I mean, do they have a first choice kicker? Is Moenga now established as first choice kicker? I'm just wondering, because he has a few dodgy moments as well as Barrett with the boot.
Yeah, I think it's another weakness. It's hard to believe we're talking about New Zealand weaknesses, but they don't have a really front line high percentage place kicker. And that's why you've seen the kicking duties oscillate between Barrett and Moenga. Moenga seems to be the guy they go to more often when both of them are on the field. He seems a bit more reliable, but neither of them are locked steady. And you look at him compared to Sexton. I think, yeah, if it comes down to, you know, a drop goal or even a late penalty or one score game, gives us an edge there, I think, because, you know, if it comes down to it, I'd back us to win that sort of a battle in terms of the goal kickers shooting it out with 10 minutes to go. You know, everyone playing on the edge of the game and trying to not give up silly penalties and stuff. Mm. Then if it comes down to that, we're probably going to come out at the right side of that, you know, because the other thing about New Zealand is their discipline around, they've had trouble with referees around their defence and stuff, like offside and in the side of rocks. And, you know, I'm not talking about discipline in terms of foul play, I'm talking about discipline in terms of giving away penalties at breakdowns and stepping offside at rocks and trying to get an edge. And, you know, they've had a bad record in terms of giving away kicks and stuff at goal, and they do give up points. Like, during this year, I think they've averaged about 19 points they've conceded, but because they usually score 25 or 30 or even 40 points, nobody pays much attention to it. So they do concede points, and they are capable of getting on the wrong side of the referee. And Nigel Owens, you know, is a good guy in the middle, because I think he's not going to be overawed by the occasion, and he'll call it down the middle. But he has a reputation for being involved in tight games as well, which is a good thing for us. But I think this New Zealand team, you know, overall is not as strong as the New Zealand team that won the World Cup 4 years ago. Okay. And that was a better team. I'm not saying they won't win the World Cup, because even a bad New Zealand team is a very good rugby team.
Yeah.
And this isn't a bad New Zealand team by any stretch. I'm just trying to look for chinks of light here where we might have a slight edge in them.
Yeah.
And as you say, if they get off to a flyer, it mightn't matter a whit at the end if they get two or three scores in front, as they're capable of doing to teams. Because we saw this against South Africa. Now, South Africa caused them lots of problems for most of that game in terms of the way they defended up and in. And, you know, they got basically two tries and a penalty in the space of 6 or 7 minutes. And that was the game right there. So they don't have to dominate you for 80 minutes to beat you. They just have to find the sweet spot, and they can stick together 15 or 20 points and the game is over. So, for that reason, they're still an extremely dangerous outfit. Even if we believe that there's slight weaknesses there, here and there, that doesn't mean any difference, you know, if they get it right. But, I still think that we, if you look at our team, it's more settled, and I think we have advantages in certain areas. But, you know, they have as well. They have a fantastic skill set, and they can play it, as they always have, tight, wide, narrow, up the guts, put air in it, whatever way they want to do. And they are good at adapting, you know, to the conditions. So I still fancy our chances, though, looking at the two lineups. And for that reason, as you said, the longer the game goes on, in terms of being a tight game, the better it is for us. I don't think we're going to put a score on them. But we know they have that capacity. If you make a few mistakes, they will capitalise. They don't tend to waste opportunities, as you saw against South Africa. They were probably, the three scores they got to kill the game were probably the three major line breaks that they needed to kill the game, and they took each one of them.
Yeah, and still the most impressive 5 to 10 minutes of rugby in the tournament, really. But a blueprint there, drag them into a low-scoring slugfest, prevent them from finding the sweet spot. Thanks for that, guys. And like, I just want to talk about Australia-England. Mikey, what's the news team-wise there? That's our first match on Saturday morning. Lovely.
Yeah, well, that's probably the biggest news of any of the press conferences this morning is that, you know, Eddie Jones has, he seems to have gone horses for courses. George Ford has been in great form for England at this World Cup, but playing at 10, but he has been dropped. Owen Farrell is now going to play 10, and we're going to have Ben Youngs and Manu Makavunipola. So it looks like Eddie Jones has a blueprint for beating Australia, and it's I think it's more grunt than deft by the looks of things.
He definitely has the Indian sign over Cheka in head-to-heads there. A quick line from each of you, starting with you, Michael Corcoran, on England-Australia, just as a spectator rather than in heavy analysis, just like as a punter, that's a wonderful match to kick off the weekend.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's like a Randwick Old Boys reunion between the two coaches. And they're really good at sledging each other and winding each other up. Yeah, that's just the Australian kind of way of life, to be fair about it. I would always expect England to win that. I mean, I look at that England pack. They're absolutely gigantic, and they've certainly gone far. Really good players in the centre. I'm not surprised that George Ford isn't playing. Defensively, you know, there'll always be an issue there. I mean, Ireland went to Australia the summer before last and won a series there, 2-1. At the moment, I would say, you know, I know the game has moved on since then, but I mean, England are better than Ireland. Will England beat Australia? I think 100% certainty they will. I think they'll make it to the semi-final of the competition.
Yeah, I suppose, Eddie, it's just you could probably dwell in the past a little too much about the Australian, about the impact that an English shirt has on the Australian mindset. And more often than not, over the decades anyway, they've had England's measure, bar the famous 2003 game, I guess.
Yeah, but I think the tables have turned here. I think England look a pretty settled side. I think Farrell is the best 10. George Ford is a very good 10, but he hasn't the same control in the game. He's got, as Michael said, defensive issues. I think Farrell brings that edge, and England are a better team with Farrell at 10. I think because now he's got Henry Slade back, who was out injured for a long time. He was always going to put Slade into outside centre, and he's brought to Alanya in to get hard yards. So it's a good England team. Interesting, he's gone for Courtney Laws in the second row instead of George Cruz. It's an interesting selection for me. I've always had Cruz ahead of Laws. I think Laws is a good athlete, but Cruz is a smarter player in terms of not making mistakes around the field. But anyway, it mightn't even come down to that. I think England have the firepower, but the pressure is on England to deliver. Like, this is everyone expects England to win, so in some ways there's no pressure on Australia. And they have the capacity, as we saw in Perth this year, to pull out one big performance. If they pull out one big performance, England are on their way home. So there's massive pressure on England here to deliver. And this will be a massive setback, because they've had a really stroll through the pool stages. They haven't really been tested per se. So I think they're going to be under the pressure that could on the day get them. Whereas Australia are looking for a bit of an ambush here. It's always in them. But if you're going on form, it's England. But this is England's quarterfinal to lose. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Czechia might have some say in that before the end of it. You know, it's interesting when you talk about rugby teams, you tend to talk about the players. You know, you talk about New Zealand, you talk about the players, you talk about Ireland, you talk about the players. You talk about Australia, you talk about Michael Checker, which is interesting. You know, he seems to be the most dominant feature of that team. But I still think there's always the possibility for Australia in a World Cup, particularly, to pull one out, and this would be very sweet for them, and it will certainly be a disaster for England. And that pressure brings its own stress on that England team. And I think that's why Farrell is at 10. He's probably the best guy to deal with it. But I still think England's to lose, but not one they will get easy, I'd say, at the end.
Okay, well, thanks to Eddie. We'll see Eddie Saturday morning. We've all four games live for you on television, and we'll hear from Michael. The Ireland game is live on radio this weekend. Now, Isaac Boss, where is he? The ex-Ireland, Leinster and Ulster scrum half. He's moved back home, and he was chatting to Michael Glennon, and Michael asked him about this weekend's match and a few other bits and pieces. Let's take a listen.
Isaac, welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast. Thanks for taking the time out of your day. Tell me, what are you up to these days? I know you're back in New Zealand. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've been doing since you moved back?
Yeah, I've obviously moved back to where I was originally from, down in the South Waikato. I've been doing a little bit of stuff, just sort of running the family farm, and as well as doing some stuff at the local club rugby and youth rugby and stuff in the Tokoroa region. So, I've enjoyed it. Getting back and stuff like that and being a spectator and trying to, you know, carry on just being involved in the game in a different aspect.
Was it always your plan to return to New Zealand when you'd finished your playing career in Ireland?
No, it wasn't, to be honest. And then early days I thought I would have stayed there for good, but it's just the way it's sort of eventuated. And then, I ended up sort of going between the two environments quite a bit with work when I was working with the Irish Players Association, first of all, then the International Players Association. And when I started spending probably a lot more time out of Ireland, and I guess just the lifestyle back here in New Zealand probably appealed to me at the time. So it was time to come home, and my dad was obviously sick and then passed away. So it was just sort of it's the right time for me to be back here in New Zealand now. So,
are you coaching underage teams now, or what's your rugby involvement there?
Yeah, I've been coaching my local club, which is Southern United in Tokoroa. So I was coaching a range of teams there, the seniors, taking senior squad, the A side and the B side, as well as the youth development side, more of an under 14, 15. great. I was also coaching counties under-19s in a big under-19 tournament that we have here in New Zealand, which is the prime sort of scouting and player development or spotting program that they have here. And that was a week-long tournament that finished up just a few weeks back. So, yeah, sort of doing bits and pieces everywhere.
Might just take you back now to your when you started playing rugby and you won underage caps for New Zealand. It would have been natural, I presume, for you to have a dream of playing for the All Blacks back then.
Probably a lot of Kiwis would have, but not myself. Look at something. My cousin actually played for Ireland before I did, Anne-Marie McAllister, for the women's team. So I would have grown up and knowing that she was, and she lives just not far up the road from me here, probably about 20 minutes up the road. So I would have known she was over there playing. I had family playing, brothers that were playing in clubs in Ireland. And I guess it was a little bit different for myself. I knew that was a possibility, but I just didn't really. And I want to play for the All Blacks, you know what I mean? And we've gone down that line plenty of times and a lot of other different, and people find it hard to believe. But I guess when you see guys like my hometown, for example, Sean Maitland playing for Scotland, Quade Cooper's playing for Australia, Kevin Malami was playing for the All Blacks and stuff like that, and I was, of course, playing for Ireland. So it didn't seem to be any different playing for a different country and our little environment. It was just sort of, everyone has their goal to be a little bit different, I guess, and probably quite passionate about their own sort of upbringing and stuff like that and their own identity. And I guess that's what it was. And I had an Irish identity here and I felt, that's where I need to go, is to pursue that in Ireland.
And what do you make of the current residency rule? There was a lot of talk ahead of the World Cup when John Klein got picked over Devin Toner. How do you see that working out? Do you understand when people say maybe it's kind of mercenary to have project players? And would you agree that it was right to extend the residency to 5 years?
I can see 5 years probably was always a better one. But look, it wasn't a bad thing. It is what it is at the time, There's a lot of Irish players playing at the moment and other teams as well around the world, So, and they potentially could be in the future, There's Irish guys playing very good rugby in the Mitre 10 Cup here at the minute, in Australia. And then obviously with our links to USA and Canada players as well. So, and obviously there's a fine line between players of heritage like myself and players of, doing the residency, but look, I don't think a lot's been made of it, and I don't think it's that big an issue, So the way things are going these days, the world is a multicultural place. The movement of people are all around. You shouldn't be able to discriminate just because, after a few years, if they're resident, if that's the rules, then they're fine, People are coming there taking corporate roles and stuff like that, and they sort of all... contribute. So, but I do think 5 years is in this case, in sporting's case, is the right way. So it might have taken a while to get there, but they're there now. And I think, that's what it is. So I don't know why we still keep talking about it, to be honest.
Just talk to me a little bit about New Zealand mentality. When you were playing, or it's only 3 years now since Ireland got their first ever win over the All Blacks. Was there a sense of arrogance, or is it kind of a natural thing that if you are always coming up against a team and you always beat them, that you kind of, you don't treat them the same? So if Ireland were playing any team that have never beaten them, it would just be natural to assume that they are superior. I remember Brian O'Driscoll said years ago that New Zealand don't respect you unless you beat them. I'm glad to have you on, because I really think I can get an honest assessment of you of what the real New Zealand mentality is when they think of Ireland as a rugby team.
Yeah, and that's it. I think it's quite ironic, they're very gracious in the defeats that they have had, and I think that is down to respect, So, and they realise, I can see why they're probably seen as an arrogant rugby nation here in New Zealand, and I'd probably be first to agree with that to an extent, but I'd also say they've, through years and years of... probably good performances, they probably actually earned their right. It comes across as a little bit of arrogance, but it's probably a bit more confidence, and depends on who they're playing and how they're going. But I think when it comes to the Irish team, they've always sort of respected them and enjoyed playing against them, but once you beat them, they respect you a whole lot more. And that's why I mentioned to I had an interview today, and I mentioned that I was talking about this historical stuff, and I said, well, look, a lot of the team in there now playing for Ireland have probably beaten the All Blacks more than they've lost to them, not like it was for us in the past, you know. So that's the new crop coming since 2013, you know. It has changed. So that 6 years, a lot of these guys never played against the All Blacks before that. So that's the dealing with. They know they can beat them. They're confident, and the All Blacks do respect them and know that they can beat them. And I think they'll be fearful as well. This is not a quarterfinal that they wanted to have.
When Steve Hansen decided to play for the last 15 minutes against Tonga with 14 men, would you say that's actually a good move in the overall planning, or would you think it crossed the line in terms of respect for your opponent?
Oh, look, and it probably didn't plan to go like that. I think it's just they got what they needed out of a match, and then they had another injury, so it's kind of like, well, this is our chance to try that, you know, put our players under a bit more pressure in a unique environment that they have to deal with it. And hopefully, I'm sure they're hoping that doesn't happen, but and that's not the first time we've seen things like that, and maybe it might be a New Zealand psyche thing, but that's quite often happens if, you know, rather than risking another player with injury or just chucking one for the sake of it and mixing up combinations, they'll always think ahead and think, well, you know, sooner or later we're going to have to go down to 14. It might not be this tournament, it might be next year or the year later, that something like that actually, you know, resonates with the players and, oh, look, we've been in this environment before with 14, so we know what to do. And, I do think it's just, I don't think there's anything masterstroke about it. Well, unless they get somebody carded, it might be a bit different. But it was a good tactic at the time, and it's not an uncommonly one used, I'd say.
What do you make of the move of switching Beauden Barrett out to full back with Richie Mo'unga? It appears to have been something that has worked well, but it's still moving somebody who is a double player of the year, world player of the year, out of his natural position. Does it add an extra string to the All Blacks bow?
Yeah, I think it gives them an advantage, not just because you've got those two players on the pitch, but relatively unknown to be able to play against. A lot of people would have played against Barrett at 10 and, you know, and expect what they expect from Mo'unga at 10, but having them both on the pitch, the dynamic changes, and they've both grown into the role. Look, you say it's been successful. A couple of weeks ago, they were saying, you know, what's going to happen? So they're getting better and better each time they play like that. So, and that's what I think has been the successful part of it. All of a sudden, it does throw a spanner in the works because you think you know how to beat them now. But and it might be just purely for a match like this against Ireland, someone that might have the wood on them, and all of a sudden you're throwing something that they haven't come up against and they've got to think on their feet. So it is going to be a lot interesting to see how that plays out and throughout the rest of the tournament.
When you look at Ireland's form in 2019 and some of the defeats they've had, like the first England one, Joe Smith kind of said they were bullied and broken, and then we had a terrible defeat in Twickenham, which again wasn't part of the plan. Would you think that Ireland's problems in maintaining the standards that they'd set in 2018 were more... Was it more mental, or was it something technical going wrong on the pitch?
Well, look, I don't think it's anything in particular. There's a number of probably aspects, you know, maybe just rhythm, one or two players not firing right, and maybe a couple of injuries at different times, you know. So, look, there's a lot read into it, and it's interesting because I'm over here in New Zealand, and I like chucking on the podcast when I'm driving because everywhere's a long way away from where you're going here in New Zealand, so I have plenty of time to listen to the podcast. And I'm quite surprised, especially through the World Cup, how everyone seems to have a doom and gloom comment around it, whereas I think we're not necessarily in a bad place at the minute because, you know, the boys are fit. Obviously, Bundy's not available, but the guys are all fit. We're here at the quarters. It could have been the All Blacks, it could have been South Africa. We didn't know that till a couple of weeks ago because South Africa could have beaten the All Blacks just as easily as Japan beat us. So it's they would have prepared for this long before, the likelihood that it could be either. So I think they'll have a game plan in mind, and that's what they've been building for, is this match. So the England game and pre-season hasn't got the same weight as this match, you know what I mean? Japan doesn't have the same weight as this match. Nothing has the same weight as this match. So in some aspects, this is really where their season begins, you know? So that's what they've been building for, and now they're in that mode. So this is their chance. They have to get it right now. They can't can't make any mistakes in terms of executing that game plan or be slightly off, and they need to do it 3 weeks in a row, not just one.
I get the sense you have a sneaky feeling for Ireland on Saturday, am I right?
Oh, I do. I do. I very much can sense it coming, and in some ways it's almost been that the fact that they haven't played as well, it's maybe, you know, I can sense it's relaxed the All Blacks maybe potentially a little bit. And that I look at it, and that game last week being cancelled is not a good thing for the All Blacks. Someone so key as Brodie Retallick, not getting that extra little bit of hit out, you know, so he'll be shy of minutes, he's a very, very crucial man for them. And even more so in the last year, I think, and probably a lot more pressure's gone on the likes of Reed and those guys because of his absence.
Isaac, thanks very much for your time and joining us here on the RT Rugby Podcast. Best of luck now over there in New Zealand, and I hope you enjoy the match.
Well, we'll do, and hopefully we all enjoy it, and we're getting ready for another one this time next week, eh?
Okay, that's it for the RTE Rugby World Cup podcast for this week. Thanks for giving us a listen, and we'll be back with you, obviously, after the weekend. Great weekend to look forward to, and hope you can join us on television and radio. My thanks to Eddie O'Sullivan, Michael Corcoran, and Mikey Stafford, and to Damien O'Mara for producing. We'll talk to you soon. Go easy.